The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
4 championships in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through, we gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through, we gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days, Marcus Boucher and Harney Graywall here to recap all of round 1 from the NBA playoffs and get you set for round 2 of the playoffs, the NBA semifinals. We got the Warriors sweeping the Blazers, going on to face the Jazz after they took care of the Clippers in 7. We got the Cavaliers taking on the Raptors after they did some sweeping business themselves. And then we got a tons of loads of other matchups between the Rockets and the Spurs after the battle of the MVPs. And we've also got the Wizards versus the Celtics with Isaiah Thomas balling out as tragically in every story he can. We're gonna kick it all off, but let's go. Kendrick Lamar, hit it.
No questions in the game, no holes in the commitment. Those two teams have a rivalry, and one has what we all want. Yet 16 all here with this chance.
Yeah. Sit down, hold up, be humble.
Style and motivation, they are personal. Here, I equals we. And there are plans, there are schemes to modernize the recent history. To shove aside all the hype and dictate the limelight.
Be humble.
Sit down. Be humble. The Warriors, the Cavs, trying to tell some NBA teams to sit down and be humble in these playoffs because they came out and both pulled off the sweep in the first round, 4-0. So let's go ahead and talk about the two finalists this year. Let's talk about the Warriors going in and facing the Utah Jazz in these semifinals. The Warriors got it done, sweeping the Trailblazers in the first round. And Harney, did they even have a chance? Because you got to think about it. The Blazers had all the chips stacked for them in this series. You thought they could have pulled off maybe one win. In game one, they had Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum go off, put up 75 points, and they still lost. Game two, no Kevin Durant. They still lost. Game three, no Kevin Durant, no Steve Kerr. They still lost, and it was their home opener. Game four, KD returns, and they just got totally blitzed out the building. So, Harney, what do you think overall about this series and how the Warriors ran through the Trailblazers is 4-0?
You got to give respect to the Trailblazers. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, they balled out. Damian, he always showed up, especially at home playing Oracle. You know he reps that 0 for Oakland. But honestly, any team has a chance to win one game, but to beat us in 7, you have to beat us 4 times. It's never going to happen. Now, we were too strong. And then at the end of the day, that first game, they came out and they gave us a gut shot. Literally, those two guys, CJ and Damian, kept that team in the game till the final about 8 minutes, and all it took was a 3-minute stretch for us in that first game to just break even, get open by 15, and just sustain the lead. And because Ian Clark came in, he was the X factor in that first game, and that allowed us some breathing room. Because after that, we got in the motion, we got in the flow, and then we realized, make somebody else do it. I think we got kind of a little cocky and just kind of made them keep doing it. After CJ Blitz, he got 20 points in that second quarter, and he was making everything, and Damian Lillard was allowing him to have it. But they did not have the low post presence that I thought they were going to have, especially with Nurkic out until even game 4. And when he came back in, you could tell he was very slow. He could not move, and he didn't even play in the last game in game 4 because of how bad he looked. People were just getting by him. That leg was definitely not right to play. I hope it doesn't affect his future growth because that was bad. He had no effect on the game whatsoever. He kind of looked a little bit promising at the beginning, but I think that leg was just not giving out. And the Warriors just had it. Once you bring Kevin Durant back in, he's smart enough to just implement himself into the system and just be fluid. And that's what happened. I think the biggest key to take out of the series is going forward without Steve Kerr. To me, that is going to be the biggest question mark, because what he brings to a team at in-game speed and in those 20-second timeouts and in that flow of the game and yelling from the sideline. So I think that's going to be the biggest situation that they're going to have to deal with going forward.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We talked about the game one. We had Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, each putting up 41 points and 34 points respectively themselves. and they weren't even the player of the game, and we had the return of Kevin Durant, and you know who the player of the game was? It was Draymond Green, who came up huge on defense, trying to state his case for Defensive Player of the Year, even mm-hmm. though it's a regular season award. He came out with a team-high 5 blocks, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals. The guy was all over the place, and here's the thing. The Trailblazers were 4 for 16 when guarded by Draymond in that game, so you see the backcourt going off, but it was Draymond shutting down the low post, and there was nothing going on inside, and had no help, and they got beat by KD in returning. And then we see even game 2, it was a close game at the halftime, but then the Dubs went on a 28-12 run. They did it with defense again. Klay Thompson wanted to respond after the first game of seeing the backcourt go off. He actually held him for 3-for-11 shooting with every single shot contested. That's right, 3-for-11 on shooting with 11 shots contested. This man was all over the place. And then we started to see Steph Curry play aggressive with no KD. And then we see the big man come in, JaVale McGee. Him and Steph going off bring a lot of life to this team without Kevin Durant. But this was a team that went 16-4 without him during the regular season. And they didn't look like they missed a stride during that second game or third game eventually. Either.
Especially because those early losses came at the beginning of his tenure being out. And right after that, at the end of the season, we were on a roll and it didn't look like we missed a step, even with him coming into our team and then losing him and Steve Kerr. It didn't look like we lost a step. I think that just Mike Brown's going to have to facilitate this team, because I honestly, in my eyes, don't believe Steve Kerr will be back. I think a back injury of that magnitude of coming off surgery, and he was leaking spinal fluid, they said. That just seems a lot to ask in about 2 weeks to come, because that's a lingering injury. And he, at the end of the day, is the mastermind. No matter how great our assistant coaches are, Ron Adams, Mike Brown, Jaren Collins, it goes all the way down to Bruce Frazier, like our players and everywhere. So all through the organization, but still, he is the facilitator. This is the man that's allowed to implement such a great system that has allowed us to flourish in so many ways, even while adding another superstar and changing our complete offense. And I think that, as you were saying, our defense is what it takes, and that's what Mike Brown is good at. Mike Brown is a defensive-minded guy compared to the offensive set. So I think that is where it's going to excel, but that's a lot of defense. And no matter what, our defense is what leads to our offense. People don't realize that. People just see, like, oh, all the threes and stuff, but they don't see how we get it. They just see a stat sheet, but they don't actually watch how we get it and how we our defense is the reason that we can do so well. And Draymond, God, cannot love the man enough. He played so well, and he kept his emotions to, I would say, the lowest I can honestly expect him to do it. I saw him catch himself a couple times. I hope his mom and his grandma are telling him, hey, you look like a baby out there. You need to cut it out and just get the W. And he was playing phenomenal. He was literally, as he always has, been the heartbeat of this team, and we ride with him.
Yeah, Draymond has been huge. JaVale McGee off the bench has been huge. Steph Curry coming back and just being on fire these last couple games is huge. We saw in game 4 with no Kerr, KD finally returns, how Mike Brown's going to do with this full roster. We should even say full roster because they didn't even have Sean Livingston or Matt Barnes either, just to throw that in there. But then they return, and they start the game on a 22-3 run, setting an NBA playoff record, 45 points in the first quarter. And Steph Curry really looked like he was finding his groove, had 37 points the game before, game 3, when they came back, when it was close at halftime, he had 34 points the night before. That's the first time he's had back-to-back 30-point games since January earlier this year. So Steph Curry is finding his shot, and then once KD returned, it was lights out, and fourth game wasn't even competitive at all, and the Warriors really did just go by the Trailblazers pretty easy.
Yeah, that fourth game was kind of shocking, because you never know how a team is going to respond being down 3-0, especially when you're facing technically the villain, the Goliath, you know, and you'd expect them to come out with all their heart, but there's, you know, they don't have much to look out, so it's either they're going to flop in the way they did, but I still thought they would put up more of a fight. I know Damian and CJ were fighting, but the other guys, they just have not enough support around them to get it done, because all the support they have are the same type of players they are, and that is not going to work. They need a little bit more outside shooting, not Damian and CJ getting the majority of all their threes. You can't ask them to take the load offensively and defensively, because their defense, honestly, you're playing with the Warriors. They're going to score. They're going to score, oh, honestly, 130 is a good game for us. It's not the best game, but it's a good game, and a bad game is holding us to 110, and usually a team to put up even 110 is a great game for them. So on a bad day, we're at your best. So that's where it really shows that they tried, but they don't have nowhere near enough support around those two guys to get it done.
Yeah, exactly. They just don't have the talent on the roster. The Warriors are just head and shoulders beyond them in terms of talent-wise. We see with just missing pieces left and right, they could still get it done, and they could still get the win. And so they'll go on to face the Jazz in the second round in the semifinals of these playoffs. And let's take a look how they did it. They went to 7 with the LA Clippers. And guess what? The Los Angeles San Diego Clippers choked once again, just like their brother, the Chargers, for the 5th straight year. The first time in NBA history a team has blown a lead 5 straight years in the NBA playoffs. And man, oh man, it's got to suck to be a Clippers fan just to see them choke. If you're a Chargers and a Clippers fan, it's got to suck being Marcellus Wiley. He's on Sports Nation. I see him complaining all the time. But, man, this really did come down to seven. But it seemed like the Clippers just ran out of gas as soon as that Blake Griffin injury, his toe injury of all things, kicked him out for the rest of the playoffs. It seems like every year they're getting hurt or they're either choking like they did against the Rockets a couple years ago. Man, it's just not fair to CP3, I feel like. He's not getting the love. He's not getting the help. Where's the bench? While on the other hand, the Jazz's bench was going off. We saw Joe Johnson coming in at 35 years old and hitting game-winning shots. I mean, wow, you talk about the things that the Jazz are able to do defensively. Harneet, what'd you take from this series, and what do you see from the Jazz moving forward against the Warriors?
Honestly, every game of this series was amazing. And you got to love Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan's resilience after knowing that your essential X factor, the guy you run your offense through, and they literally rely on Blake Griffin so much. And when he went down, these guys stepped up, and they started balling out. But the Utah Jazz are just playing a team type of basketball. And honestly, even though the depth on the Clippers is ridiculous, top to bottom, that how much support they have, they just couldn't get it done. Maurice Spates was supposed to be there to help them out, especially in that Blake Griffin role. He was absent for them, which I don't mind if you gave us your last best years. I'm okay with that. But still, no, that series was amazing. And ISO Joe, they went to him. He was amazing like this in Atlanta his entire career. And that man, just because he went to the Nets, just because the Nets are terrible, no recognition, that man... this is a great pickup. He chose to come here. He decided to go over here over a couple other teams, and he showed why. He believed that this team can get them the wins. But now they're facing a test like us. I would have wished the Clippers won just because I knew that would have been done in a sweep. I don't believe we will sweep. I think that the Utah Jazz are good enough to get one and possibly even two. Two would be hard, and that's, I believe it's all going to be reliant on Derek Favors, because Utah's a tough place to play. But Derek Favors has stepped into his role. This man used to be a double-double machine at the early start of his career, but after injuries has kind of slacked off, and Rudy Gobert is taking in that dominant center role. But when it used to be Enes Kanter and Derek Favors, these men used to ball. And game seven, he ended up getting a double-double. He had better stats than Rudy Gobert at the end of the day. He had 17-11. So if you can get that production from him coming off the bench against our second unit, against the Warriors' second unit, I think it's going to be very tough. JaVale McGee can only do so much, especially because he's literally hustling all the time. He does make great plays, but sometimes he's hustling so hard he ends up looking foolish. And I could see why he wins so many goddamn Shaquille Fool Awards. But I just think that their biggest shot is they're going to have to end up winning the points in the paint battle. And they have the ability to do that. And that is going to be tough, because no matter what, those are 2 points that are coming very easily against three, that if we have a bad shooting night, anything can go.
Yeah, exactly. I'm right there with you. And Derek Favors is actually going to be questionable for game one with the back injury. So that should play a huge factor. And then you talk about Rudy Gobert. He's also got an injury with his knee, and the Jazz actually won a game against the Clippers without Gobert. And you talk about their defense and what they're able to do. Well, if you don't got those two big men down low, it's going to be pretty hard to stop the Warriors trying to get to the basket at all. And then you would talk about what the Warriors want to do for a game plan. They got to just go to that high pick and roll game, get both of those defenders, if Favors even playing, but definitely get him rolling on the pick and roll, get him moving side to side and maybe off balance. But that's the thing. The Warriors can go straight to that small ball lineup, get Draymond Green at the center. You can't stand in the paint the whole entire game. You got to go out and guard him sometime. So the Warriors should be able to execute their game plan pretty good against this banged up Jazz team.
Yeah, I still think that no matter what, the Jazz are going to have to play phenomenal and the Warriors are going to have to play terrible. They're like, we're going to have to shoot very poorly every night for the Jazz to beat it. They're going to have to be hitting their three balls. And I think that another X factor for them is Ingles, because he's not very great on his three-point percentage, but the games that they ended up beating the Clippers, especially the one without Gobert, he was huge, especially when ISO Joe was getting to Magic late in the game. That double team came, he dished off on the smart plays, and Ingles was there to hit those threes. And if he can be open, because I know the Warriors will allow them to shoot, because they'll allow other people to beat you, because they know that they are good enough to beat any team, even at their best, if we are on our game. And I think that defensively, it's just going to be a priority to make sure that Zaza and them don't allow these big men to catch the ball as close to the basket. They need to make sure they push them out a little bit and force them to work down into the paint and work to get every single bucket.
Yeah, we'll see how the Warriors do defensively. We've known that they've been great defensively all year, as much as they are looked at for their offensive output. It should be interesting to see if they can contain Gordon Hayward, who had a great first round of the series against the Clippers. He's going to be balling out, and the more points he scores in each game, the more money he's going to get paid next year. He's looking for that free agent contract. They're hoping to keep him there in Utah, but we'll see what happens. I think the Warriors should take care of the Jazz. I think Utah might get one at home. Five, everybody's calling for a sweep, but I think Utah might get one. I'll take the Warriors in five.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it was six, but my gut's telling me five, just because I just don't see us shooting that bad in six. And I think that no matter what, it's going to be that. We're not losing at home. I would say that if we're going to lose a game, it's going to be game three. But because that crowd, they'll get into you. They'll start getting rocking, and they They love their Jazz. They got nothing else besides them Jazz. So best believe they love their basketball out there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be an intense matchup.
Yeah, you're right. That's about all they got out in Utah is the Jazz, so they'll be rooting for their home team no matter what. But we got another matchup down in Texas where there's actually two teams facing off, and they'll be facing off for regional territory for some bragging rights, and that's the Houston Rockets taking on the San Antonio Spurs, and this is the first time that they've faced each other in the playoffs since 1995. Think about it. All those years Tim Duncan was in the playoffs, he never played against the Houston Rockets. Crazy. The crowd is going to be hyped down there in Texas. It should be one hell of a matchup. The Spurs got in by going to six games with the Memphis Grizzlies. They went up two. The Grizzlies tried to come back. They said, "You ain't going to rook us." Take that for data. Tied up the series 2-2. But then, you know, Kawhi Leonard had to go off and came back in that series while the Rockets had to go through Russell Westbrook. The battles of the MVPs between Russell Westbrook and James Harden in that matchup. And we saw it was not just Harden, it was the whole Rockets team, as Russell Westbrook cannot do it himself. Harney, what were you most impressed by both these teams making it to the next series?
I think that definitely the two best teams out of each series made it to the next series, and I think this one's going to be one of the best ones until the finals. I really believe that, just because these are two teams that are very evenly matched in some areas, but I think that the Rockets might have the edge in this only just because it took the Spurs six games in a tough six games. That was a very tough series. I could tell every single game was very tough for them to win. And they needed Kawhi to score 31 points a game. I mean, that's not really his strong suit. You know, Kawhi does not go for 40 very often. And now you're almost expecting him to do that because the other guys just don't have enough support at all to even get the extra points that he needs, because this man is doing it on both ends. And I think that they're going to wear him out at some point. I know he never shows any emotion, and you cannot tell if he needs a water break or if he just started the game or if he just got out of coming off a vacation. You never know what is going on in his mind. He's so poised at all times. He does it with such class, as Greg Popovich says, and I love it because it's so true. I just think they're going to overuse him. I just don't think they're not going to get it done. They got it done in the first series. That was a good Grizzlies team, but this is just a Houston Rockets team that is going to pick up the pace on you very quickly. And Mike D'Antoni, who I believe is coach of the year with my MVP candidate, James Harden, I think that they're just going to outshoot them. They're just going to have the three ball in lock, and if they can get that done, I think they're going to win it.
Hey, that's one thing the Houston Rockets can do, and against that series against Oklahoma City Thunder, they averaged 111.7 points per 100 possessions, and they just couldn't be stopped, and it showed that a team is better than one man. Russell Westbrook could not get it done by himself. He did join Wilt Chamberlain as the only player to claim three consecutive playoff triple-doubles, but here's the thing. When Russell Westbrook was off the floor for 6 minutes in Game 5, in those 6 minutes, the Rockets outscored the Thunder 27-9. He got asked all those questions about where was the help from the team, but he wanted to interrupt, stop Steve Adams, say, "No, don't try to separate us." But someone else had to step up, because Russell Westbrook was literally trying to do everything he can. Here's a stat for you from the Harvard Sports Analysis. Russell Westbrook's usage percentage in the first round, 46%, was greater than Michael Jordan's versus the Monstars, 44%, in Space Jam. Yes, a Harvard study looked this up, and Russell Westbrook was using the ball more than Michael Jordan against the Monstars. I understand he was playing with Looney Tunes, but Russell Westbrook just couldn't get it done by himself, and the Rockets shot the lights, and it showed. I don't want to say it showed who was the better MVP, because you switch roles. You put Westbrook on the Rockets. You put Harden on the Thunder. I think the series still goes to the Rockets just because of all the potential surroundings. It is sure an interesting topic to think about. Harneet, what's your final thought on these series and Russell Westbrook using the ball more than Michael Jordan in Space Jam?
That might be the greatest statistic I've ever heard of. I know Harvard Rowan is your thing. I know Crew is it. Not basketball, besides Jeremy Lin and besides Ryan Fitzpatrick. I know it's not football, but that might be the most amazing statistic I've ever heard for them to go in depth and even have the creativity to even think of that, of comparing those two. That is absolutely great, and that just shows you, what are you doing sometimes, Westbrook? And I absolutely hate watching him. I love him as a person. He's a man is loyal to death, and I love the way he actually goes out there with his business mindset, does more with just basketball and everything. I love that he actually goes out and wears those ridiculous outfits. He's showing himself, he's showing his creativity. But man, oh man, I just hate watching him as a player. This man is the whole offense and defense in a sense, because they were running right through him and their defense is not that good. And I would hate to play for him. I'm sorry. I can understand why Durant left. The whole offense is dictated on how or when he's bringing the ball up and what defense he reads. Rarely do I ever see a play called. It's mostly about how he reads the defense himself and if he's going to attack. The majority of his assists that he comes from are all about driving in sometimes uncontrollably just because of his burst, getting a double team, and then just kicking out to the open guy. And somehow those guys hit it. And he just has no trust in his players. The game they started off so well is after game three, I believe, he had that terrible fourth quarter with some abysmal stats. Oh my God, 4-for-18 in the fourth, shot more than his entire team. And if you looked at the stats of his entire team, they were actually shooting very well that game, but they didn't get that many shots. I believe the team probably took 97 or something that game, and he shot 47 of those. That cannot happen in any type of basketball game where you're shooting almost 50 times and you're only coming up with 40 something points. You can't do that. Those triple doubles mean absolute garbage to me. In my eyes, he's literally essentially made the triple double useless, because usually when a person gets a triple double back in the day, their team would end up winning that game and he would be a main factor reason why they won it. Now he's getting triple doubles in ways where I'm watching him, I'm like, what are you doing? I just don't understand sometimes. I'm like, you just can't. You need to have trust in your teammates. And when he actually got all that criticism, the next game he went out, what? Taj Gibson went 6-for-7 and he was balling out. The team was actually playing well, but they just couldn't get it done. And I do not agree with that excuse where people say that he does not have as good, or he has a terrible support system around him, because that team is a better than a majority of teams in the NBA, top to bottom, than a lot of other teams. So don't, I hate that when people say that. Westbrook, this was off his play. You're amazing. You're amazing single player, but you're not a team player. And you got to fix that if you want any chance of traveling and going to another team free agency and having anybody wanting to come play with you.
You do too much. You're not Superman, you know.
Yeah.
Westbrook needs to calm down. We've seen it. We talked about it on our previous podcast. We saw it when they had the squad with James Harden and Kevin Durant, when James Harden left because he wasn't getting the shots in the finals. Mm-hmm. We've seen it with Kevin Durant now. We don't know how big that relationship factor played into it. We saw how they're treating each other like ex-girlfriends during the whole NBA season. So we really see Westbrook's true colors, it seems like, and how the team player he is. We've seen the success that James Harden has gone on to and become one of the best point guards in the league when he wasn't even a point guard before, how great of a teammate he is, and now how Kevin Durant just goes and slides so great in with the Warriors' chemistry. It's got to bring up questions about Russell Westbrook. Great player, no doubt about it, but putting up 50 points, back-to-back-to-back, triple-doubles, it doesn't matter when you don't got Michael Secret stuff in the fourth quarter and you're not winning games.
And that's where they needed him the most, and he just did not perform in the fourth quarter, and that's what shows about great players. It doesn't matter if you're doing it for three quarters. If you can't get it done in the crunch time, what does it matter? Like, this triple-double, yeah, people are going to remember it because you're the first one to do it in ages. But at the end of the day, you didn't win anything. Your team was never considered formidable at any point. Nobody was worried about the Thunder. Everybody was just worried about one man. And at the end of the day, there's no I in team. You got to get the W by using a team game. That's why the Warriors were so great when we won the championship. And I hate it when people say anything about that. You're like, oh, well, look at you, the team that you had. Yeah, we drafted well. Yeah, blame us for drafting well and blame our organization for that. No, we got it done because we were a better team, an overall team. And I remember one game where I was so worried about us losing and just getting done out of that when we were down 3-1 against the Thunder. And then I saw Russell Westbrook start shooting. And that's where I started getting optimistic, because I was like, if Kevin Durant doesn't touch the ball, we have a real shot at winning this game and taking it out in very early in the game. And that's what happened. Russell Westbrook, if as long as you are in the fourth quarter and taking threes, you're never going to win the game.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook in the fourth quarter has really failed to appear. I know he had some game winners in the regular season, but playoffs is crunch time. That's the time you got to win. That's the time you got to hit your shots. We've seen James Harden and the Rockets hit their shots, and we've seen Kawhi Leonard for the Spurs. He was hitting his shots. It was so clutch against the Grizzlies. He was shooting 68.2% in the fourth quarter plus overtime. He was coming up huge. I know Harney was talking about the overusage. We got to see some of those old Wiley vets step up. We need Manu Ginobili. We need Tony Parker to step up. This should be a great series against the Rockets. They can shoot the lights out versus anybody, but at the end of the day, I think the Spurs might have the overall experience. You want to look at it this way: Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker have got 265 playoff wins. The whole entire Houston Rockets record only has 179. I'm going to take that alone with the experience and Kawhi Leonard being the best two-way player in the game. I can't wait to see him match up one-on-one with James Harden, one of the best offense players in the game versus arguably one of the best defense players in the game. It should be one hell of a matchup. Mike D'Antoni has done amazing things for this Houston Rockets, but I think the Spurs might take it in seven. Either way, it should be one hell of a series.
I completely agree. This is going to be, as I said earlier, this is going to be one of the best series of the entire playoffs until the finals. And just because they're two teams that have two MVP candidates and they're both the 2-3 seeds, and you know these teams have played well the entire regular season, but now it comes down to seven games. Every game matters. And I think that the Rockets, just because they're fast pace, are going to take it, but I think they're going to go seven. I think it's literally going to go down to the wire till the last game, and I think that's because they're going to have to live and die by the three ball, and that's how their offense has been ran the entire season, and D'Antoni loves to push that pace no matter what, and I just think that Kawhi Leonard is going to have to put up 40 at least in 3 to 4 games for them to win the series. I just don't – I think they're asking a lot of him because he has to also guard James Harden on the other end. And that already tires you out enough. I know Kawhi is an animal, that he is one of the biggest savages in the league, and he loves the amount of use that he gets. But at some point, it's going to put on his back. I just don't know. He needs Patty Mills and Danny Green to start stepping up from the three-point line for them to actually get it through. And he needs Tony Parker to play as Tony Parker did in games 1 and 2 of last series, because Tony Parker was looking vintage. But then it just slowed down. It just stopped going because, yes, he's older and he was just slowing down. And if he can get it, if he can get 7 full games out of Tony Parker to get him through to the next round, what is he going to have left in the tank for the next round? So that's why I just don't see the Spurs poised enough to make the run because of how much they need and rely on Kawhi.
Yeah, that's true. You want to look at the Spurs and the mileage they had to go through going through the Memphis Grizzlies once again, one of the toughest rebounding teams, one of the toughest defensive teams in all the NBA, with both their big men, Marc Gasol, hitting game winners in overtime, extending those series and making the Spurs play extra minutes. We'll see what those old crafty veterans, if those minutes add up. There's a couple of crafty veterans in the NBA getting some rest because they got the sweep, and that's LeBron James, as the Cleveland Cavaliers got the sweep and got plenty of rest as they will be taking on the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The Cavaliers, like I said, got there by sweeping the Pacers. It wasn't as easy as you think. You think 4 games? Oh, cakewalk. No, they actually had a chance to probably lose each and every one of those games. There was actually a game where LeBron James had to pull off a 26-point comeback, the biggest in NBA history. But then Paul George was not living up to his Gatorade commercial. It was hitting air balls instead of clutch threes. LeBron doing his thing, as always. Paul George probably playing his last day as a Pacers. Harneet, what was your big takeaway from that series?
Honestly, that series was great, and I knew it was going to be tough and physical. I honestly did not expect it to be a sweep, especially even game 1 went down to the wire. Game 2, it got a little out of hand. In game 3, the Pacers were in complete control, but then LeBron started hitting that outside shot, and I saw that look in his eye, and I just knew he was about to go 08 Pistons on him, and he just went off straight. He tried to bring his team involved, and Tyronn Lue was getting kind of little heat, even though it was kind of a brilliant play on him to sit Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving in that third quarter and let LeBron go to work. And once that man goes to work and he can actually become selfish without any kind of regret on his mind of how it looks on his image, that man went to work and he got it done with honestly playing with the second unit. So that just shows how LeBron can take any team that LeBron is on the Eastern Conference, we can go to the finals. And that's just how it is. And I think the Raptors, they had a tough fight because they had to deal with 22-year-old sensation Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was playing out of his mind. That man is going to be a force to be reckoned with for the upcoming years of basketball. And honestly, if I was a free agent, I know Milwaukee's not an attractive place to go to, but you have to look at how that man plays. He dishes the ball. He plays team ball, and he hustles all the time. I would rather go play with Giannis than Russell Westbrook. I'm just throwing that out.
Man, he almost had a 25-point comeback for himself in the series.
That man was amazing, and he just did a lot, and the Raptors could not figure him out. And every other player was stepping up that needed to, and that was a great series as well. But the Raptors buckled down. They knew where they were. They knew what place they are in the league and how much better they are in that team all around. The players started stepping up. Ibaka started getting involved. Kyle Lowry, who stopped playing so stagnant with this game, coming back from the wrist injury. And DeMar DeRozan started stepping up, shooting about 61% in the paint. And I think they just got it done. And I think the Raptors are going to have a tough test. I don't think it's going to be like last year where they're going to go 7 and actually put up a test. I honestly think the Cavs are going to win this in 5. I think this is going to be a very easy series for them because Kyle Lowry is not the Kyle Lowry of how we know him to play the all-star. And that is the biggest factor because DeMar DeRozan can't score 40 every night.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm thinking Cavs in 5, maybe 6, because I think that addition of Serge Ibaka might be able to provide some defense guarding the rim against LeBron James when I'm attacking the rim. But at the end of the day, the Cleveland Cavaliers are just once again head and shoulders above in talent with all those shooters, with all those bench. Kyle Korver can get going anytime. J.R. Smith can go get on anytime. Shumpert can come in, lock someone down. Kevin Love's back healthy. He can hit shots. And of course, there's clutch Kyrie in the fourth quarter. The Cavs just have too much talent for this Raptors team. I think it should make it interesting, but I hope Drake's up there, up in Canada, up in the north, to witness this slaughtering, and I don't want him to hop on the Cavs bandwagon or even come back to your Warriors bandwagon. Keep him out of the NBA Finals. I'll take the Cavs to 1-5.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Jurassic Park, how crazy it's going to be in every single game, because it's not going to be pretty. And I want to say that they'll get at least two games just because that addition of Serge Ibaka, I truly believed, was probably the best offseason and in-season acquisition that any team did, but it is just not panning out. That man is not playing consistently. He's not the Serge Ibaka of the Thunder where he could hit that mid-range consistently. I know he's tried to incorporate the three-ball game. That has not been effective, and he's not playing how he did around the rim and underneath the rim and playing his back to the rim, but his defense is still there. He's going to have to just show a lot of hustle in there, and if he can start actually hitting his mid-range game, that's going to be the X factor, because Tristan Thompson will not go that far out, especially because he knows he's not quick on the guard, quick on the drive. And I know that Ibaka has the length, but I just don't know if he can stay consistent enough. And that's the biggest key right now. And the Cavs were, after that big slaughter, they've been on the roll right now. And it's going to be hard to stop LeBron, especially when this is the time he waits for. He's waited all season for this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm interested to see if Ibaka has a chip on his shoulder, because last time he played LeBron in the playoffs was in the finals. It was with OKC back in the day. So he might play with a chip on his shoulders, might want to try to D up LeBron himself. But at the end of the day, we're talking about LeBron James. I don't want to hear nobody complaining about taking days off and resting now, because look how he plays when he has the rest. He's coming out like a young 20-year-old, like he just got drafted. The guy can still ball. Obviously, he's still one of the greatest in the league. So I still think, like we said, the Cavs in five, potentially six, just because the Raptors got some defense now that could extend it. But we'll see what happens in the first part of the Eastern semifinals. Let's go ahead and look on to the Celtics and the Wizards. The Celtics in the number one seed will be taking on the Wizards. They got it done in six against the Bulls. That was a pretty interesting series, while the Wizards got done in six against the Hawks. This Celtics-Bulls series, man, oh man, so many storylines. I don't even know where to start. The Bulls got off to a 2-0 start, and Rajah Rondo was having the revival of his life. We're talking about the resurrection of Rajah Rondo. Where did this man come from? Wasn't even showing up during the regular season. Now he showed up in the playoff games, was looking like a defensive scout, hopping routes left and right. And man, they went up 2-0, and he had 20 assists in the first two games. But then tragedy hit, and we hear about Isaiah Thomas' sister passing away. RIP to her, and condolences to their family. And what a tragic story. And after those two games, he actually went home to visit his family. After he went and visited his family, he came back, and the man started to ball out. He went on a mission, just started winning, and they got that back-end sweep as they got it done in six, and that man is playing on another level, and he says he's doing it all for his sister, and it truly is a really inspirational story to watch.
It definitely was, and it was very sad, too, just because seeing all the pictures and the videos, opposed to pregame and everything that's happened like that, to play with something of that magnitude on your mind and go out there and focus on a playoff game, not even a regular season game. And this is the first time in a while the Celtics have got that number one seed. You know Boston was ready to go. And I honestly think the best thing for him was going to Chicago. I think taking a break and leaving his central city of Boston, because as much as I know that they're just showing empathy and showing him that they're there for him with all like the pregame stuff, having like a little prayer and stuff like that, I just think that putting a lot of focus on it might have made it a little bit harder for him to focus on the goal and on the task of basketball, because bringing all that in and just bringing his emotions in, because there's no way to hide your emotions in a situation like that. You know, that's blood, that's family. You know, people don't even know what that really could feel like, except him. And so to me, his resilience, they come down, they lose their first two games at home. They're going to Chicago looking to almost get swept because they got two away games coming up. And what do? They showed out. Every player played for everybody else, and they just came back and they just got to work, and they won four straight, and they got it done. I think showed a lot of resilience, and I think they're going to be on a run. This is the strongest thing a team can have is momentum, especially in the playoffs. If you start winning games and you start feeling good and getting in that flow at the right time, I don't think anybody can stop you.
Right, they got their jitterbugs out of the way, being in a number one seed, getting down 2-0 right away, and then like, oh, what do we do here? No, they get the backhand sweep. The things are feeling good. That's a lot of momentum. Isaiah, tragic to hear, but he's playing on a whole nother level. But then we want to talk about the man he's going to be facing in this series, and that's John Wall, representing for the Washington Wizards. He is playing on another level himself. He was averaging 29.5 points per game, 10.3 assists, and 52.5% shooting from the field. This man was going off coast to coast, behind the back, making all types of crazy plays, and he should be the biggest X factor trying to take the Celtics out of the number one seed.
John Wall is amazing. This man is a true point guard, a true floor general. The way he controls his offense, and the saddest thing is he's always played with the injury played guard, this max contract guard and Bradley Beal, who just becomes inconsistent at times, especially in their two losses against Atlanta. He was absent. He was not be able to hit the open shots that John Wall provides for him. When John Wall is driving down in the lane, the collapse of the defense, that man is getting open looks at all times. If he can start hitting that three, this is going to be a tough task for Boston, because John Wall is going to get his 30 and 10. This man is playing out of his mind, and the control and the burst, this He is so beautiful to watch because he makes the point guard game look so elegant. The way he'll cross you up and within a second, all in control, dip out to the basket. I know Russell Westbrook and the other guards got that. They got the burst, but not in the control that John Wall does. And this man is amazing to watch, but I just don't think that he's going to get enough from Bradley Beal every game to get it done. And Marcin Gortat, I think they wanted to get Al Horford, and I think that he is going to be the one that's going to dominate on them because he started coming into form in the last series. He would end up playing up very high, hitting that mid-range, getting to the free throw line, and passing the ball. So I think that's where they're going to end up lacking, because if they put Avery Bradley on John Wall, I think it's going to be very tougher for John Wall to get his normal action that he does, just because Avery Bradley will D you up, and that man will get into your head as he D's you up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Don't stick Isaiah Thomas on John Wall. That's a nightmare matchup for him. Isaiah Thomas giving one of the best shooting percentage in all the league against other point guards. So we'll see John Wall against that matchup with Avery Bradley. It should be one hell of a one. See if he gets help from those other players. It should be interesting. I want to see if he's able to get into the paint and take advantage. You talk about Al Horford. Well, the Celtics only grabbed a measly 44.2% of the rebounds last series, and that hurt him a lot. If the Wizards can maybe use their size down low, we'll see what happens in this series. I think it should be an exciting one, but I think the Celtics, with their momentum, I think it's going to be a back and forth battle, and I see the Celtics winning at home in game seven.
I got them in six, just because I just don't think Marcin Gortat and Bradley Beal, who they rely on a lot to get it done, will just get it done. And I just don't think they're going to stay enough consistency for John Wall. I think John Wall is going to average at least 30 and 13 in this entire season. I think that he's going to have his way with whatever he's going to want to do. I just don't know if he's going to get enough support, as if from like an Otto Porter Jr. Can he give you that production that he was giving you early in the season, that 10 to 12 points to come in and get those buckets for you, especially in the corner threes that he was getting so good at? I just don't see it. And the Boston Celtics, that momentum, it just gives me the belief that they're going to get it done. I think they'll win the first two at home, lose the next two, and then get the last two.
Yeah, it should be a great series no matter what. And it should be a great semifinals, round two of the playoffs, all across the board. We want to talk about this Warriors-Jazz series. That should be a great one, with the Warriors having to travel up to altitude. I know the players aren't happy. I know KD or Draymond came out and said, there's no clubs out in Utah. There ain't nothing to do. We'd rather be in LA. So we'll see if they can get it done like we have projected. And then on the other side of the Western semifinals, we got the Spurs and the Rockets. I'm taking the Spurs in seven.
Rockets in six.
And then we go to the Eastern Conference. We both got the Cavs taking out the Raptors, and then we both got the Celtics taking out the Wizards to set up the Cavaliers versus the Celtics. I got the Warriors, Spurs to get that long-awaited matchup that we've all wanted so badly. Greg Popovich, and hopefully Steve Kerr can return to the court. But man, hard knee. Got the Rockets pulling up the upset. We shall see what happens no matter what. You know we're going to be back at the end of this round to cover the NBA Conference Finals. Warriors, Jazz, let's go. Bay's Golden Days. You know you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, at Bay's Golden Days. Check out our website, bgdsports.com. This podcast is going to be available on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. You know what it is. Let's go, Bay's Golden Days. Sold it, sold it, sold it.
Steady gold, pony boy.